The Institute.
Institute.
Institute for Justice.
The National Law Firm for Liberty.
Welcome to Deep Dive with the Institute for Justice. I'm Melanie Hildreth, and I'm here with IJ Associate Director of Activism Brooke Fallon and Activism Researcher Alex Montgomery. Today, we're going to do a deep dive into an IJ project called District Works. District Works is the brainchild of IJ's activism team. Brooke, Alex, and their colleagues work at the grassroots to help people all over the country stand up for their rights and improve their own communities from the ground up. There's no better example of their work in action than District Works here in Washington, D.C. Brooke, can you start us off by telling us what District Works is? What does the project actually entail?
District Works is a coalition of small business owners, organizations, and community leaders around the Washington, D.C. area who are fighting to make it easier to start a business in D.C. And we're really excited about this project because it's an opportunity to bring together different areas of IJ's expertise. We're working on research, we're working on grassroots organizing, and we're working on an action-oriented approach in order to actually change the whole way that DC looks at business licensing to make it so that it's cheaper and faster and simpler for business owners to navigate.
How did you decide that this was something that IJ should tackle and perhaps that the activism team in particular could tackle?
Well, I started my IJ career at the IJ Clinic on Entrepreneurship in Chicago, and there our work focuses on working with lower income entrepreneurs in Chicago. And so I really learned a lot about the role that government can play in putting up roadblocks to people who are just trying to start a business and pursue their innovative ideas. And one thing that really struck me was how there are just so many laws on the books and so many rules, just pages and pages of regulations that can be impossible for people to understand. And in the clinic, we did a lot of work to help people figure out how to navigate all of that information. But we also worked to change laws when they were really making it difficult or impossible for people to pursue their businesses. So when I came to headquarters about 4 years ago, I was really excited to be in a new city here in Washington, D.C. And I was wondering if there was a way we could take some of the great projects that worked so well in the clinic and see what might be adaptable here in D.C.
And how did you set out to get started with that project? What is it that you do when you're, okay, looking at D.C., you know, how do you even go about it in a city that this size?
Well, so from all those years of working with entrepreneurs, I definitely internalized the importance of market research and treating things like a startup. So before I made any assumptions about what, you know, regulations were presenting the most problems for people, I set out just to go door to door and talk to business owners in different corridors in the city and find out, you know, do people really think that business licensing is a problem? And what exactly are the challenges they're facing? And I was so shocked that the first day I went out and just did some street outreach on H Street, the first businesses I stopped by, they sat me down and talked to me for an hour, 2 hours, just lamenting about all of the crazy paperwork they were navigating, how they couldn't get straight answers, how all they wanted to be able to do was run their businesses, not, you know, have to figure out how to be a lawyer and complete all this paperwork that they have to do before they even get started.
They must have been so grateful to have a sympathetic listening ear, because it must be very frustrating to try to go to the city and get answers and maybe not get any help.
Exactly. I think for a lot of people, you know, they can start to feel unheard because they complain about these things, they get stuck waiting on hold for hours. So a really important role that we play in activism is just going out and talking to people and at first just being a listening ear to learn about what their challenges are.
So what did you learn? What did they tell you in all those conversations?
So people had all sorts of stories, all sorts of anecdotes about times they really were getting bounced between agencies, times that the fees were piling up, when unexpected paperwork and costs were presented to them that they really didn't account for because they didn't understand what the rules were. And from all those conversations, we really distilled things down to three main themes: that it is too expensive, too slow, and too complicated to get a business off the ground in D.C., which is how we came to our motto that we've been using as our kind of call for reform, which is that it should be cheaper, faster, and simpler to start a business in D.C. and really in every city across the country.
So you know that it's bad. The entrepreneurs obviously knew that it was bad. The city officials maybe knew a little bit, but even they didn't understand just quite the magnitude of the problem. So how did you and the team go about enlightening them and teaching them what the entrepreneurs were dealing with.
Yeah, so one of the things that Brooke had mentioned about, you know, entrepreneurs feeling that things are siloed, that they talk to somebody from one agency and then they get sent to another agency and there's just a lack of communication across agencies. So we noticed that one official from one agency might know what the process is for that specific part of starting a business, but not know what the answers are for the other parts of the process. So what we decided to do was we needed to have a way to kind of show visually what the entire process looks like for an entrepreneur. And so we decided to create this flowchart, which is, you know, a way of visualizing from step one to step to the final step. How do I start a business in DC?
And when you created this flowchart, we got to see it here in the office, and it was laid out on a table, majestic in its size. It was 8 feet long by the time that you get through it. How did you, I mean, that is a lot of work, I suspect, putting it together. How did you go about gathering that information and then making it comprehensible to people?
Yeah, so it really started by just trying to dig through agency websites and trying to figure out what are the forms that I have to fill out, what are the fees that I have to pay, and what are the registrations that I have to complete, just for general businesses. And so we started out by digging through the agency websites, but we also talked to entrepreneurs because there were things that we couldn't find out on our own. And so we talked to the entrepreneurs who had actually been through the process themselves. And they, you know, gave us clues as to, well, here are the late fees that I received and here's when I received them. And so through those clues, we were able to start to kind of put together a picture of what it looks like. And then the final piece I would say in terms of building the chart was looking through the District of Columbia code. So we really, you know, got into the weeds of every single requirement because we wanted to capture kind of this concept of death by a thousand cuts, you know, that it's not just that an entrepreneur can't satisfy one part of the process necessarily. It's that all of these different requirements add together and make it very onerous for entrepreneurs in the district to complete the process so they can just get their businesses off the ground.
And you said that even in trying to put it together, you'd go to web pages that were apparently essential to getting these licenses, but the links wouldn't work. And so if you're an entrepreneur and you're in that how had people been navigating that on the ground as you talk to people? It's like if they know they have to do X, but it's basically impossible, what are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the big issues is sort of the technology just isn't there. We noticed it was kind of funny at some times, but also really sad that many of the links on the websites for the agencies are just circular. Yes, you'll click on a link and it'll take you right back to the homepage. And that was frustrating for us because we were trying to figure out how to model this process. But I can't imagine how frustrating it would be for an entrepreneur when you have to figure out what you need to do tomorrow, what you need to, what forms you need to bring, what fees you need to pay, and not being able to do that. And so that's why the flowchart was important, because it really was the first example, I think, of an attempt to model the entire process so that an entrepreneur could have a bit of an idea of what it actually looks like and how to navigate it, while also showing that it's way too complicated and making sure that we need to have an eye on reform.
And oh, please.
Yeah. And in reality, the way that things work out, because it's so complicated, because things are so siloed, is that we talk to a lot of business owners who just either decide not to pursue their idea at all because they can't figure it out, or they've spent 2 years trying to figure out all the licenses they need. And then there are also business owners who just choose to operate without their registration and licenses. And for those business owners, they're taking a really big risk. The fines for operating without a license, depending on what kind of business you're running, can be really high. And that's a dangerous position to put people in who are just trying to, you know, produce a business that's going to satisfy a need in their community.
And Alex, I think that you said that there were 128 different licenses that, and people are sort of expected to figure out which one is the right one, and then they start down that path?
Right.
Or what if it's the wrong one?
Well, yeah, so that's a big issue. So the way that the District of Columbia licenses businesses is it has a different license for a business activity. So let's say you want to start a delicatessen, then there's a specific license for that delicatessen that you have to acquire. And so there are 128 different license categories. So 128 different activities that are licensed. And what we found is a lot of entrepreneurs just don't really know how to put their business in a box. It's kind of like an old-fashioned way of licensing. But we also found that sometimes they can't, you know, figure out how to understand which category their license falls into. And sometimes their business is involved in multiple business activities. And if that's the case, then you have to acquire 2, 3, 4 different licenses, like for a grocery store. It's the fact that there are so many different categories and we really need to bring down those categories. But it's also the fact that we just don't believe that the district does a very good job of communicating how an entrepreneur needs to find out which license that they'll require.
Especially when some of those licenses are almost identical in the definition. You know, if you're an entrepreneur, you're starting a food business, there are something like maybe 12 different licenses that could work for you. And some of the definitions differ by a few words, but can cost hundreds of dollars different in the fees. So people are just left to figure out, you know, okay, am I technically delivering food to people on site? Is it offsite? Are they taking it to go? And it's a really frustrating, confusing process that kind of sets people up for failure.
Yes, you mentioned delicatessen. Is that a specific, separate and apart from restaurants, there's a special deli license?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, and a mobile deli license.
Right. So two different deli-related licenses.
Yes, yeah.
And all of them cost hundreds of dollars. So let's just say you're somebody who wants to start a grocery store in a particular ward or neighborhood of the district. Then you could be looking at perhaps having to get a grocery store license, a delicatessen license, other kinds of licenses, and each one costs hundreds of dollars. You could be spending thousands of dollars just to get your business licensing in place.
And what about enforcement? Is it very aggressive, kind of haphazard? Are they mostly, you know, the city will leave things be unless there's a problem? How have you or the entrepreneurs seen the licensing regime enforced against them?
It's kind of a mix. You know, there are some rules that don't seem as heavily enforced, although the penalties on the books, if someone did choose to enforce them, could be pretty high. But then there are other fees like late fees for if you file for your business license renewal just one day late, it's a $250 fee. After a month, that becomes $500. So these things can really pile up. And one thing we've definitely noticed is just the deterrent factor with a lot of these things that, you know, you are technically breaking the law by, you know, getting the wrong sorts of permits and licenses for your business. And people are worried about that, especially some of the entrepreneurs we've worked with in the lower income communities in DC, people who have criminal records, who, of course, are very nervous about doing anything illegal, who are just trying to get a fresh start. So we've noticed that it can have a really chilling effect when people see that all these penalties exist.
Absolutely. And Alex, how long did it take you then to gather all of this information and turn it into that flow chart? What was the...
Yeah, so it was about a 2-year process, actually. So it was quite a long time, just because we had to figure out what all the requirements and regulations are, but then we had to figure out how to actually model that visually. And so there was sort of this conflict between we want to show that it's extremely complicated because that's what signals the need for reform, but we also want it to make sense visually, to have a flow. And so it can't just be a bunch of squares on a page. So we ended up working with a data visualization expert as well to help us turn what we had at that point, which was like a 30-page outline of regulations from the code, into this kind of visually compelling piece that the flowchart is today.
And was it worth it? Worth all the time and the effort?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so Brooke and I have been working on this project a long time, and the flowchart has been a way of kind of grabbing people's attention and helping them understand that this is an urgent issue that needs to be addressed right now, not only in the district, but also in cities and counties across the country. So, you know, we've been at conferences where we've shown the flowchart and city officials have come up to us and said, oh, this is amazing. We really need to reform this in my city as well. Let's work together to figure out what we need to do.
And one of the things that is really exciting about the flowchart is that, like Alex said, we've been trying to figure out how to communicate death by 1,000 cuts. You know, IJ has done such amazing work around the country around occupational licensing reform, trying to, you know, cut those barriers out. But we're just seeing that at every level of government, the fees and the licenses and the permission slips add up. And it's overwhelming for people to even understand what those are. And so the flowchart has been just such a great way to capture that nightmarish scenario visually so that, you know, policymakers and change makers can look at that and see, wow, this is actually a problem. And they can start to pick out, okay, these are some of the duplicative steps. We even included in the flowchart yield signs and stop signs at steps that can really slow people down. So we are really excited that it's been a tool to get people excited about advocacy, but also a roadmap for reform.
So now that everybody is, they're aware of the urgency, they're on the same page about just how cumbersome the process is and how overwhelming, what is the next step? What have you identified, you know, as you look at something that big, where do you start? You know, what are the places for reform that you are deciding to focus on for now?
So, yeah, as you mentioned before, our motto has been that we want to make it cheaper, faster, and simpler to start a business. And we've boiled, our reforms down to about 5 areas of reform that we think would bring very real relief to Washingtonians based on all of the outreach and research that we've been doing. So the first is that DC should streamline business licensing to make it less complicated. You know, there shouldn't be 128 business license categories, especially when many of them are going unused or very rarely used. They're just on the books to kind of confuse people. Then we also believe that the fees should be lowered. It shouldn't be so expensive to start a business just right off the bat. Business owners have to get all of their permission slips and pay all their fees before they make a dime. They don't even know that their businesses are viable yet. So they could invest, you know, thousands of dollars in compliance fees and then find out, oh, no one actually wants to come to my restaurant. And that's a really huge risk that we're asking people to take. The third piece is that we really believe there should be a one-stop shop, a place, whether it be ideally online, but also potentially in a physical place, where entrepreneurs could go and find all of the information that they need. Based on our research, we found that business owners can interact with as many as 16 different agencies and sub-agencies, and each agency and sub-agency, they don't really talk to each other. So having a location where people could go and find the answers to all their questions would be a really huge help and time saver for people, and a cost saving for government officials who end up answering the same questions over and over again. And then the fourth piece is that we're really interested in trying to get rid of some of the roadblocks that are in place that really disproportionately affect lower income entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs who have criminal records. So there are some license categories that require criminal background checks that we'd like to revisit. There are some restrictions on people who want to get certain types of occupational licenses in DC that the board can take a look at their criminal record. And we would like to make sure that if the board is looking at someone's criminal record, they aren't holding very old, you know, records against them that have nothing to do with the occupation that they're trying to pursue. And then we're also interested in reforming a law in DC called Clean Hands Certification. And that's a requirement that in order to get a business license and a lot of other government services, you cannot owe the government more than $100. And that includes everything from tickets to taxes to water bills.
And then it's pretty easy to owe the government $100.
Anyone who drives in D.C. knows that, you know.
Anyone who's parked in D.C. exactly knows that you can owe the government $100 pretty quickly.
Rack that up really quickly. And then the last area that we're looking at is home-based business reform. Entrepreneurs we talk to all across the city really want the ability to be able to start in their home. It's a great way to figure out if your business is viable, to get started on a low budget. So we've been working with a lot of home bakers around the city who want to be able to produce foods under what's called a cottage food law. That's just a law that allows you to sell certain safe homemade foods at events and to your neighbors in order to kind of make some income and figure out if you have a more viable business that you'd like to grow eventually.
So a lot of these recommendations were inspired, of course, by the hard work of the flowchart and also by actually those conversations with entrepreneurs and their experiences. Are there a couple of stories that stand out in particular to you of people who had been burdened, you know, by these areas for reform in particular, the problems that you want to reform, or stories that just kind of stand out as emblematic of what's going on in DC and how it can be fixed?
Yeah, so one story that sticks out to me is we've been working with an entrepreneur who had her corporation registered in Maryland. And, you know, D.C., the area is unique because you have Virginia and Maryland so close that there's a lot of interlap between the three jurisdictions. So this entrepreneur had her business incorporated in Maryland, and she wanted to start a nonprofit in D.C. focused on lower income communities that would be, you know, affiliated with the business. And she called us wanting to work with us because she had heard about, you know, our desire to reform what we've been talking about. And she didn't have the proper licensure. And I felt weird because I felt in the situation of telling her, wait a second, I actually don't think that you yourself have the proper licensure. And it was because she had been told once she had completed the first step that she didn't need to go beyond that. And so that really highlighted to me that you had somebody, she's an award-winning entrepreneur. She's been featured in magazines. Her business has been recognized as successful and really important for the communities in which she works. Even she had trouble navigating the labyrinth in DC. So that really stuck out to me.
And emphasizes that maybe these licenses aren't so important, that she was able to do such good work and be recognized in that way without having checked all of those boxes.
Right.
Exactly. And we've, in our outreach, met with, at this point, about 200 at least business owners and heard their stories. And there are just so many. One that sticks out to me is someone who wanted to start a home baking business. She's a disabled veteran, recently divorced, really excited about kind of starting her new phase of life. And she is an amazing baker. And for years, you know, she's baked her sweet potato pie and different goods and brought them into neighbors' houses, to her coworkers, and people have just gone crazy over it. They love it. And everybody tells her, hey, you should start a business out of this. So she was interested in starting a cottage food business in DC, and she fitted her kitchen to really fit with her disability so that it's, you know, built in, so she has places to rest in between you know, her baking and taking things out of the oven. She's really set up everything to be customized in the best way for her. But she was shocked when she saw how expensive it is if she actually wants to go through the whole registration process and how limiting it is. So if you want to start a cottage food business in DC, you're limited to $25,000 of annual revenue. And
That's hard to sustain.
Exactly. In a city like DC, that you just can't make a living off of that.
Yeah. Well, now that you've identified these areas that need fixed, have you already started to begin the process of trying to reform them? And if so, what have you done?
That's been one of the things that's been so exciting about this whole initiative is that we're finding that people all around the city, within the government officials, entrepreneurs, organizations are all really excited to take this issue on. So we've been able to have a lot of conversations with DCRA, which is the licensing agency here in DC. They have new leadership. And I think we've been able to play a really important role in putting together the research for them and diagnosing the problem by putting together our crazy flowchart. And then we've really done the work of going out into the community and listening to what people's needs and priorities really are. So we've done everything we can to be a liaison there. And that's an exciting development because now the licensing agency is going to be talking next month about their plan to collapse the license categories as we recommended.
That's great.
So that's exciting.
You're doing sort of this explicit advocacy as well and hosting events. To connect people, to connect the entrepreneurs directly with the policymakers and regulators in DC and plan to do more of that as you look ahead? What are the avenues that you're pursuing to get these things done?
Exactly. This summer right now, we're in the middle of a summer roundtable series where we've been hosting just small events of about 12 entrepreneurs in different parts of the city, just to bring people together to talk about what are the challenges that you're facing? What would you want to say to city council and to the mayor if you could? And those have been a really great opportunity to make sure that people's voices are being heard and people are being brought to the table that normally aren't. Because the thing we've noticed is that even when governments try to reform business licensing, they tend to talk to existing business owners. And the people who often don't make it into that conversation are the entrepreneurs of tomorrow or the people who are stuck in the licensing process right now. So we're really trying to make sure that they're a part of these conversations as well.
And do you have any early, is it too early for any success to have materialized, or has there been some progress that is motivating you to kind of keep going down this path?
Yeah, so some of the reforms that we're talking about will be a long-term project, but we have had some milestones and successes that we've been really excited about. So, for instance, the cottage food bill is something that D.C.'s is really, really behind the times. D.C. has one of the worst cottage food laws in the country. So we've worked with council members and a coalition of about 150 home bakers around D.C., and we've been able to get legislation introduced, and it's been through a hearing, that would get rid of that $25,000 revenue cap that I mentioned and would allow these producers to sell in more venues, since right now they're limited to only selling in farmers markets and special events. So that bill will be going to a full council vote this fall. We're really excited about that. We've also gotten to support a bill that would lower licensing fees for new and small businesses. And right now, as another exciting thing we have in the pipeline, we're coming towards the end of finishing a policy report that we're putting together that really, pulls together all of our research, all of our recommendations, the conversations that we've had with entrepreneurs, so that we can really hand policymakers our roadmap for how we can make DC a more welcoming place for entrepreneurs.
It's one of the coolest things about the activism team in general is just how focused you are on real world results and making people better off as fast as you can. How many people does that cottage food bill potentially impact in D.C.? Do you have a sense of the magnitude?
Yeah, it's likely hundreds. We've been hosting workshops, partnering with some other organizations in the city for people to talk to them about what the current law is and how they can operate under it and how we're working to change it. And we've had hundreds of people register for these events. We've had to shut off registration. They've sold out. So it is a hugely popular opportunity for people. So many people have a recipe that they're great at making and they just want to see, hey, can I earn some extra income doing it from home, not have to worry about childcare costs? It's a great entry point for people.
So last question for both of you. Based on the work that you've done, the success that you've had, what if someone came to you looking to do something similar to try to make the climate better for business in their cities, do you have any tips or advice that you would give?
Yeah, so one thing that I would say, and I think it's just an important thing at the outset for a city that's, you know, kind of got its hands up in the air and wondering how can we do better to support our local entrepreneurs, is make sure that an entrepreneur doesn't have to go too far to understand the requirements. And that can just be as simple as figure out what it's like to Google search how to start a business in X city. And what should pop up immediately is some sort of checklist or one-stop shop portal where the entrepreneur doesn't have to go to, 20 different web pages to kind of try and piece together the requirements. So that's something that cities can do right away, is they can make sure that it isn't too difficult for the entrepreneur to get a snapshot of the requirements right away. And then once they have that snapshot of the requirements, then we can talk about ways that we can actually, in a targeted manner, kind of make some of the individual requirements easier and less onerous.
That's great.
And in the long term, we really encourage cities to take that hard look at, all the steps that it takes to start a business and think about what can be cut. The thing that we've found in a lot of these conversations, there are so many people who are excited about supporting small businesses. So many people want to see diverse, coffee shops and restaurants and clothing stores in their neighborhoods. but it can be tough to figure out how to really welcome those folks. And we found that a lot of conversations tend to focus on temporary fixes, band-aids, you know, well, we'll hire more caseworkers to help people navigate the process, or we'll invest in technical assistance.
We'll create a special license.
Yeah, exactly. And what we're really encouraging officials to do here in DC and elsewhere is, with our help, with IJ's help, is to take a hard look at what can we actually get rid of. There are so many regulations on the books that are outdated, that make no sense in today's technology. And the best thing that we could do to save people time and money and confusion is just getting rid of the things that don't need to be there. And again, IJ is very excited to be a part of that and be a resource for cities across the country who really want to take that on.
Well, thank you, Brooke. Thank you, Alex. That concludes today's show. Thanks also to IJ's supporters who make all of our work possible. If you enjoy getting this kind of in-depth content on what we're doing, please don't forget to follow us and to subscribe.